This podcast is brought to you by Liquidware. Liquidware is the leader in adaptive workspace management solutions for Windows desktops. Their products cover all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all workspaces, physical, virtual, DAS, or cloud.
At the third stroke, it will be...
Well, hello and welcome to EUC Digest, your bi-weekly audio snack on everything EUC related. This is episode 4, and in today's show, we're going to be talking about performance and go EUC. But before we dive into all testing related details, please allow me to introduce ourselves. My name is Erik van Klaveren, and I'm your host for this episode. And with me in the air is Jitz Langendijk. Hi, Jitz. How are you doing?
Hi, Erik. I'm good. I'm good. I'm really good. Yep.
Bit of a cold?
Yeah, a little bit under the weather, but doing okay. Yeah. Good enough to be here.
To do a show.
Yeah.
Great. Yeah, but we're not alone.
No, definitely not. No, we have two awesome guests today.
Okay, and what did you find out about those guys?
Well, yeah, to be honest, we asked a little bit around, and there's one guest who ever started a conversation with hand gestures while driving and was able to continue that conversation on social media. So there you see the analog world changing into the digital to the digital side.
I think we have to I don't know what is happening here, but
maybe we will never know. That depends on the guests. So and one other guest, and maybe a lot of people are not aware of this, but everyone who's ever been running some login VSI tests or doing some benchmarks with login VSI, well, at least we know his favorite cup of coffee, the triple shot cappuccino. So,
wow,
yeah.
I didn't know. I haven't heard at all about this cup of coffee. So,
it's supposed to be awesome. So, but the triple shot cappuccino.
I know at least one of them isn't IT Jesus.
He's not.
No, he's not.
Okay.
And these are both the guys who say there should be data, otherwise you would just have an opinion.
Completely true.
Yeah. So, well, if you didn't know who these two guests are, could you please introduce yourself, guest one?
Yes, my name is Ryan Verfs-Bijkerk. That's me. I'm the guy that loves the triple shot cappuccino. It's included in, I think, almost all of the workloads of Login VSI. And... that's me.
I didn't know. Awesome. Awesome that you're in our show.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome to be here. Yeah.
And the other guy.
So I'm designated as the other guy.
The other guy.
Well, great start that is.
You're not the one that is not IT Jesus.
No, definitely not. My name is Eltje van Gulik. I'm a workspace consultant. I'm a colleague from of Rijn. And people have in the past... told me that I look a little bit like IT Jesus. Yeah.
I was once at a customer where they told me he didn't came along across the water. He didn't walk on it. And first I thought, what? What are you saying? And then I realized they were talking about you.
About me.
And actually he did this morning, walked over water, right? So,
yeah.
So where are we today?
Today we are at Arrow. They provided us with a room, so we should mention them. But we should also mention Gurami, who has provided these awesome studio microphones. So if you think, why are these guys sound so sexy? That's because of Gurami.
Well, and some post-editing, I guess, but...
Yeah,
a lot of post-editing. Definitely post-editing, yes.
Yeah, but a special thanks...
Majors.
Yeah, but a special thanks to Edwin Hilario from Arrow in the Netherlands. He provided us the room for today, and I was relating to the entrance of the Arrow office here in Houten, where there's a little bridge over the water, so...
Yeah, in fairness, Ryan also walked over water, so...
Yeah, we all did, yeah. I guess, yeah. We're all a little bit special today.
Do we?
Okay.
Wow. Okay. Let's just continue. So first of all, you started a brand, a community platform called now Go EUC.
Yeah, correct.
But you didn't start off with this name.
Correct.
You also had to change it.
We did. Yeah, just like you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you give a bit of an explanation why Go EUC? Not the name, but what is the platform?
Okay, so GoEUC platform is the research community platform for all EUC related topics. So we benchmark a lot of products.
Technologies.
So we are geeks. We want to play with new technology. Yeah, and we're testing that.
But it's pure testing, or is it everything EUC related?
So at the start of GoEUC, we do a lot of performance testing because it's interesting content, but we strive to have a broader content library. But at the moment, we're primarily focusing on performance-related topics.
Yeah, most of the tests are around performance and scalability.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the first thing why you started this platform.
Yeah, exactly. Correct. Yeah. Correct.
And yeah. You do performance testing. Do you do that manually? Do you do it with scripting? Do you use tooling with that?
Well, Ryan just said that we're geeks, and he's absolutely correct. So there's no manual work involved at all. No. At least
you're as lazy as
there is some manual work involved, but we strive to automate as much as possible.
Yeah, if you have to do it more than twice, script it.
Exactly.
Yep, correct.
Yeah. Or ask Ryan to do it.
Yeah. Are you always using the same tools for performance or scalability testing, or you have different tools for different kinds of tests? Or
we have an entire library of tools and scripts that we use. Primarily the load generation we're using LoginVSI. They provided as well the license for that, so the entire lab is all licensed. But also using remote display analyzer for all the protocol information. We're using Perfmon data. It's a lot of data that we collect. It's also depending on the scenario, of course.
And talking about these scenarios, because there is a lot of there are a lot of products, a lot of solutions out there. Who comes up with what's going to be tested, or what kind of tests, and what's the ultimate goal with the testing? What is the actual findings or conclusions that you want to take out of the testing?
Well, that's not one question. That are like four questions.
Sorry. Yeah.
Wait, and why is this important?
Is this important? Okay, start with the first one. GoEUC is not just Elcho and Ryan. It's a whole team. At the moment, we have how many contributors?
Wow. Tricky question. I think it's like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
Already?
So we function as a team. So as a team, we decide what is relevant and what we think will have a positive impact on the EUC community. And at the moment, we have a backlog with over 80.
Yeah,
with over 80 research ideas. And from that, we have a bi-weekly meeting, and we decide which research we're going to publish, when, prep it, and divide it among the members.
Wait, before you continue, because when you decide when to publish or what to test, I can imagine that there are a lot of vendors involved and they don't want you to publish.
Or that's correct.
Do you also involve the vendors in your performance testing?
Yeah. It's a little bit depending on the scenario itself. If the results are not as expected, we always involve the vendor. We provide the data to it, provide the feedback, what we have seen. And we try to work out at least the cause of the difference.
Because we're not infallible. It could also be possible that we did something wrong in the testing, we did something wrong in the scenario. So we always try to involve the vendor as much as possible to see if they have new insights on it.
And sometimes they have like valuable feedback, and that we did something in the testing that's wrong. And that's for us the point that we don't publish and we reschedule the entire scenario.
But now, one of the examples for that was the LoginVSI progress bar that we saw. And Citrix mentioned that to us, and we changed it in our posts.
Yeah, correct.
So can you, because I was more like thinking, can you talk us a little bit throughout the entire process? Because I know it's a community thing, and everyone within the community contribute with ideas on what
the community. Yeah.
Well, the GoEUC community on Slack, I see a lot of activity over there.
Correct.
But for example, I have a question on, the impact of antivirus on a new Windows 10 build, for example. Or you can pick any example, right? So
yeah.
I'll just throw it in the Slack channel, and you put it in the backlog, and bi-weekly you decide, I'm prioritizing which kind of tests you're going to do next.
Correct.
And then what?
So the prioritization is decided based on the topic itself. So if we see a lot of activities for around the question that you ask in the Slack channel, we do a research. So we look at Twitter, on other websites, if the topic is really relevant. Based on that, it gets a priority in our backlog. Once we decide that it's on top, we decide the scenarios itself. We want to create content that can be readable, that's easy to understand. So therefore, we need to specify each individual scenario. Sometimes it can happen that you have further questions and that you end up in like 30 scenarios. It's way too much for at least for us to publish. So therefore, we strive to keep it a maximum of 4 or 5. Based on that, then we prepare the scenario. If you want to be involved, you can be involved in prepping everything. Then we're going to sit together, discuss, of course, the scenarios itself. Then we schedule everything in the on the lab environment itself, and then we start the test.
Or maybe we do some test runs beforehand to see if the results are interesting.
Or as expected.
Or as expected.
Everything is working. But once the test is really scheduled, if we have like 4 scenarios, it's going to take 4 days.
Yep.
And that's automated.
And how many times do you test before you publish results?
So for us, it's each scenario.
At least 3 times, right?
It's 10 times.
10 times, yeah. Okay.
So everything that we publish is an average of the 10 times. If results are, so we have an outlier in one of the runs, we remove it from the set. If we have to remove more than 3, we redo the entire scenario.
Yeah. Did that happen before?
Yeah, it did.
Okay.
Sometimes you have influences from other components, or you forgot to disable something. Or it can happen. We're human. We can
only
make
human
mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. Even Ryan and I.
Yeah.
The backup was running.
We don't have backups. Yeah.
But you said to the EUC community, we had... internally in EUC Digest, we had a bit of a conversation what EUC meant to us. What does it mean to you, folk? Is it just the end user computing and does it remain over there? Or is it everything involved which you use to
What's the scope of Go EUC, basically?
You want to
answer
that?
Do you also, when I request some testing on different storage solutions, for example, you could argue storage is not, well, primarily...
Typically end-user computing.
It's not end-user related, but the other hand, as you said, it does have an impact on user experience. So
is it not related? Because I think it does.
It all depends a little bit on the definition of end-user computing. If you take the broad end-user computing, it's everything that has to do with an end-user, and storage has to do something with an end-user as well.
Yeah, that is why end-user computing is the coolest thing in the world, because it involves pretty much everything to give the end-user what it needs.
Exactly.
Yeah. Even AI, machine learning.
Next topic is core switches and routing.
Of course, it will.
But it has an impact. Yeah,
but to come back on your question, storage related, we can test that. And I think it's part of the EUC. But the difference, we always look from a user perspective. So we want to talk about user experience.
How does that impact the user? How does storage solution A impact the user in regard to storage solution B?
Yeah, because now we talk about, and of course, as geeks among each other, we talk about the testing, but the real added value is, of course, the reporting or the blogs or podcasts or videos. What kind of output? You're giving this back to the community, but what is it that you actually give back to the community?
So we
results.
Strive, we strive to help educate the community, but businesses, but also ourselves, to help understand the IT solutions that we test. So we provide results. Results are comparisons with A and B.
Yep.
That can help you understand the impact when you implement the solution.
Okay, so when I'm architecting a new environment, then at least I can make some decisions based on facts, on the impact of my scalability or my performance. But it helps me as an end user computing architect or designer or whatsoever, at least to make some good decisions in your in your all, well, designing process, basically? Or
yeah, we always say you have to validate yourself.
Of course,
because we test in a lab environment. Yeah. It's all simulated.
It's all an isolated environment. There's no outside interference that's in the lab. There are no noisy neighbors on it. Exactly. There are no other components running on it.
But the results can be used to guide you and help at least to take that into account in your designs.
So, and this is primarily based on blocks or?
Yeah. So we,
this is a podcast. So now it's a podcast.
It is. but now we need to know where, well, first of all, how can people contribute to this community? Where can they find you, the Go EUC community, and also where can we find the output that?
Yeah, so everything that we do, we publish on our website, so our blog. That's www.goeuc.com. Go-euc.com. There can you all find the results. So everything that we publish, we want to make it open and easy to read. So everything is in a blog format.
Yeah, so it's all freely available.
No registration
required. So I can use it. Yep. Can I make money out of it?
Yeah.
Probably.
Okay. Well, it adds knowledge to your skill set.
Yeah, but if I want to monetize it, I can make money out of it. Or at least, do I have to mention you?
There's a copyright on all the content, but you can use it in sales activities. But the copywriter still force you to at least mention the source.
Yeah, all data is licensed on the Creative Commons license. So you're free to use it just as you mention it and mention the original content.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Well, that's fair.
Yeah.
So and this is the output of all this geeky testing.
Yeah, correct.
Towards the community, which is awesome. But what about the vendors involved in all those different tests? I mean, I work for a vendor, and as an employee, as one of the vendors, I could argue that your findings are valuable to me as a vendor as well. So there you have a different end customer of all your testing results, right? But maybe that can be challenging from time to time or from test to test.
Yeah, sometimes it is challenging. Of course, depending on the scenarios, the results are not always that fun to also explain. And it comes that we always strive to involve at least the vendor itself and to talk about the results. We share everything that we do. We shared the method how we come to the results, and then at that point, it's a collaboration between the vendor and us.
Yeah, and for the vendor, there's also the possibility if the results aren't what they expected to change that
and to improve their solutions.
Improve their solutions. Yeah,
Well, from a vendor perspective, I would say it's a true gift basically that someone is testing your stuff.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that gives you the ability to improve your solutions.
But if the vendor is open minded, they see it as a positive feedback.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And are there some vendors who don't think it's positive or relevant to their?
Back in the days with Project VRC, we had encountered some complicated scenarios with specific AV vendors that didn't like the testing.
And the results.
And the results.
Well, in that order or the other way around?
You can have no comment, Ryan. You can
I'll leave
no
it
comment.
In the middle. I'll leave it in the middle. So, it can happen. It can happen that that the vendor don't see it as added value, especially when you're going to compare results with different vendors. It can be confronting to for
vendors. Because if you compare vendors, there's always someone who ends up on top, and there's always someone who ends up on the bottom. And the one who ends up on the bottom isn't the happiest camper.
Yeah. No, of course. I can completely understand, but these are the facts of life.
In defense of a vendor, maybe you have some unique selling points of your solutions which are not included into the test, and that makes the end result you're not the happy camper.
But you specify what tests are done, so if your UP isn't
USP,
unique selling point,
isn't published in those tests.
You try to mention that as well, because we only do a performance test. Yeah. So the we have a level playing field for all players, for all vendors involved. But it could very well be that one of the vendors comes out on the bottom in terms of performance and scalability, but has some added value that other vendors don't have. And we try to mention that as well.
Yeah. Okay. And have you ever wanted to publish anything and a vendor said to you, okay, if you do that, we're going to have some legal actions?
No.
No, not.
Not yet.
Not yet.
To be continued.
Mm-hmm. So you need to challenge yourself more with the testing, I guess. You're not at the edge right now. No legal involved. So
no, but there are comparers that for fun, some vendors they are scary. And I think a nice example is comparing VMware and then Horizon with Citrix Virtual Desktop, Apps and Desktops.
Yeah,
that's one of the tests that's. It's an interesting one, but also for both vendors, it can be scary.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. Yeah.
So we need to be subtle with publishing those kinds of results. We need to provide the proper context for how we test it, and take time. That it just take time to get those publications online.
And are those vendors trying to get better results in the connection and communication
towards
you? Do
they try to influence?
Yeah.
No, they're not influencing because we decide what the context is. But of course, if the results are not that positive, they want to prevent that's going to be
problem. But I think the biggest thing is they try to understand what is happening in our tests with our product.
Yeah.
So they can have a better understanding on how it works and how they can improve it.
But you're fully transparent in your testing, right?
Yep.
I mean, everything is published on your website. This is how we test.
Yeah.
The testing methodology, the lab layout, it's all open.
Yeah, correct.
Oh, that's important to the vendors, but also to the UC community. At least you know how the results are.
Yeah, because we have all the old on the website. Everybody can challenge us. If someone says, well, your research is shit, they can just test it himself with the same configuration.
Okay, and I know VSI is also having their own test labs.
Yeah.
How do you differ from those guys?
We publish.
They don't.
They sell.
If you see, so the VDI are like a pro, they primarily doing the survey.
Yeah.
Also provides us a lot of information, what's hot in the market. So it's really valuable for us as well.
I think for pretty much everybody. I always wait for the survey to come and read it.
Yeah, exactly.
You need to fill it out first, right?
Yeah. But,
just kidding.
In my former job role, I filled the survey in a couple of times for different customers I work with. So.
But I know they do publish some results. But we are quite frequent with our publications. And
To put some numbers with that, because we're all about data. In the last year, 2019, we've published more than 26 researches.
There's one coming still.
There's one still coming, so 27 maybe this year. Yeah. And we had more than 70,000 unique visitors on our website.
So there's going to be a Christmas special this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There is, yeah.
And, of course, when you're listening, this one is recorded before Christmas.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, right? It's got to be published somewhere
I think
2020.
Somewhere
2020.
In the future.
So actually, this is, well, one of the days after the new Star Wars. Just to, now everyone's, oh, okay.
No spoilers, man. Yeah. I haven't seen it yet.
Me neither. No worries.
So is there one testing or one test scenario that really, out of those 27 in 2019, that really sticks out or was really interesting? Or?
Yeah, I got a personal favorite. For me, it was the ad blocker testing. And for me, there was really an eye-opener. So the results, you can, of course, read it on the website. I really recommend to do that. But to provide a little bit of context, we have tested the use of ad blocker within an VDI environment. There are two possibilities there. So you can use a plugin-based ad blocker within a web browser, but you can also use a centralized ad blocker like a bi-hole or a firewall that can include those kind of rules. And we have seen that it has a really influence on capacity.
Which one did you test?
So we used the ad blocker plus within Chrome.
Okay.
And we use a pfSense firewall where we included the same whitelisting rules or the rules from the ad blocker.
Yeah, the DNS blacklisting.
Yeah, exactly. And you can the results show that when using the centralized ad blocking, it has a huge impact on capacity. in a positive way.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, because it's very funny. We used to, we had a couple of, we did a couple of events as well where we presented. And the funny story is, if you ask them people, do you use an ad blocker at home? Almost 90% of the people raise their hand and says, yes, of course, use an ad blocker at home. And then you have the follow-up question. How many of you use an ad blocker in a VDI context? And then there's a dead silence. Only two or three people raise their hand. And we wanted to show that even if in a even in a VDI environment, you can get very good results using an ad blocker.
It's actually, yeah, and it's also a little bit like thinking out of the box, not in the box. And I like that one.
I don't know why you shouldn't use it in a VDI.
Now, if you're an advertiser company, then maybe you want to see your ads in the VDI environment.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. But for if you have a VDI environment, you want to have the least amount of impact in that environment so you could scale.
Of course, because you don't want to waste resources in showing ads.
Yeah.
But a lot of people forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is it actually just forgetting, or is it? I mean, it's strange. As you mentioned, Eltjo, a lot of people use it at home as a consumer, basically, when they're designing and configuring their VDI environment at the office. I don't think it's true that they simply forget. I mean, there must be a different reason.
Did you include it in your designs back in the days?
I like ads. I don't use any ad blocker at home.
There are a couple of times where ad blockers were involved in a design, but
I think mostly
on request of the customer.
Yeah, yeah,
I think most people don't see an ad blocker as an enterprise ready solution.
No,
I think there is some truth in there. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I think this might be coming because people start to get more aware of what is going on, how much data is collected, how much ads are exposed to you.
Yeah, because it's not just the ads that you see, right? It's also the tracking cookies that are being processed.
And there are some specific companies who don't allow these things within their company because they're secretly involved with all crazy stirs of defense and those kind of things, and they would ask for such a solution in their environment.
But those are most environments that are also disconnected from the internet.
Yeah, they're air-gapped environments without any internet access at all.
Yeah, exactly.
Not always.
In most cases.
In most cases, they will do.
If you take security really seriously in your VDI environment, you don't want to expose your users to the outside world, maybe, but
I don't see it often implemented at customers right now. I think it's...
For me, it's about 50-50 in CMA customers. Some customers do, some customers don't. It's around 50-50 mark.
But just to come back to, and of course, we want everyone to read the articles and see how what you have tested and the results, of course. But can you, in percentage-wise, can you maybe share a little bit on... Well, you can do an educated guess or ballpark figure...
It's around like 40%.
Yeah, that's the same number I had in my head. Yeah, 40% reduction in increase in scalability. In scalability when using the centralized ad blocker.
That's a lot.
So your VSI max is like 40% higher? Okay, well, that's interesting. Definitely.
There's one context though. It's all, of course, depending on the workload and the websites that you use.
Of course. There's always, and that's what you meant, of course, it's a lab environment.
Yeah, exactly.
And every customer should test within their own environment, with their own applications. And I would always argue, not even with a script, but with actual users, key users, because it's hard to replicate that.
So what I always recommend is, of course, test yourself. But after you test within your own environment, then use your monitoring solution to see the actual behavior within production.
Yeah.
I think that's the proper way to do it. Yeah.
So, and what about you, Eltjo? Have you any special favorite out of those 27 tests this year?
Yes, actually. Yeah, the one that stood out for me was the VDA testing. We did some tests with the different VDA versions of
from
the Citrix.
Citrix.
From Citrix, that's right. And for me, that is a very special one because we had to... had the opportunity to work very closely with a couple of people within Citrix to explain our results and to see what we did. And that was a very special one for me.
But I have to provide a little bit of context. We actually published the results, and then Citrix reached out to us to point some flaws out in our testing.
Okay, but you tested different versions of the VDA with the same Windows 10 build and Citrix delivery controllers and all that kind of stuff, or different versions of controllers as well? Or
no, we purely focused on the VDI itself. Yeah.
So and there you see, you get some results that different VDAs show out different outcomes in your VSI Max.
Exactly.
Okay.
We saw a huge leap in the scalability for the later VDI versions. And that leap was so big that Evan Citrix said, hey, this is strange. This is a much bigger leap than we thought.
Okay.
And they reached out to us, Mohamed Dawood from Citrix, one of the engineers. And we had a few chats. There were quite a lot of chats, actually.
Yeah.
And we changed the testing methodology after we talked to them. And we redid the test and we republished our results.
Citrix reached out to you and said you did some things not correctly.
No. It was actually quite different. They were very involved in it, and they were very curious on how we did the testing and how we came to the conclusions and the results that we had.
But they made some explanations.
Yeah, they did.
And does this involve you to change your regular testing, or was it just this testing one?
Yeah. So, logging VSI, when you do a workload, actually a virtual user logged onto your environment, and they will start activities within applications. But what also logging VSI provides is a progress bar of the user itself. So you see in what segment the user is and during what run within the workload. When you implement a VDA from a specific version, I'm not sure which one it was, but Citrix applies some visual optimizations. And what we have seen is that the behavior of the progress bar of logging VSI changes. There's a little...
So actually, they did some encoding and decoding on the progress bar because this one was visual. What changed the result?
Yeah, what Citrix did within their protocol, they had the opportunity, a way to detect the progress bar, and they visually disabled it for the newer VDA versions.
So usually there in a progress bar, there's some animation.
Yeah.
And for from a specific version of the VDA, the animation is disabled by default.
So what that means is if there's no animation, the amount of frames that have to be sent over to the client will drop.
Yeah.
So it won't have to be encoded. The CPU usage will go down, and the VSI Max will go up.
Yeah. Okay.
So that's not a level playing field anymore.
Yeah. So just curious, was the most recent or recently released LTSR version of Citrix included in those tests as well?
It's actually running as we speak.
Yeah. Okay.
We scheduled a couple of days ago.
Yeah,
I think.
Okay, and the. Days ago. So it runs for days.
Yeah. So what we do, we can schedule scenarios. So in this case, we have the actually all the versions of the LTSR. So we're testing with the latest one. It's 1912.
Yep.
But also with
just released.
Just released. Exactly. But we're also testing with 715 CU 5, 4, and 3. And those are scheduled. So once the first scenario is done, it will automatically update the catalog and continue with the next testing.
And do you also test this on different hypervisors as well, or?
No, it's the same same context.
Actually pretty much the same results and not to have some variables in there.
Yeah, exactly. Should explain focus on just a couple of things that you want
to
test.
We did the same deployment. So we're using MDT for all our operating system deployments. And the only thing that has changed within that test sequence is the VDA version.
The VDA version.
That's it.
Okay, yeah.
Okay. So I think we talked enough about this topic. Is there something you want to share, or do you have any EUC related the listeners should know of? This could be anything. An article or an event.
I think in general, if you are interested in EUC-related topics, just go to our website and read everything. There's also a button towards the Slack channel, yep. So you can directly join in the Slack channel. It's open.
Yeah, EUC is a community. Go EUC is a community, so please, please join our Slack channel. And get involved.
Yeah, get involved. And if you have something that you really want to see on the website, you can just reach out. You can reach out on Twitter, on Slack. You can call me if you like. It's possible.
That's old school.
It's old school. Or send a postcard.
Okay.
Could also be.
I was going to ask, where can we find more about you? But you're already spoiling.
Sorry. No, but you can reach out and then we you can at least submit your idea. Even if you want to collaborate and do a research yourself, you can just reach out and then we work together and we're going to schedule everything. Of course, there is a backlog, so we have to schedule also with the timing.
But this could change in time if it's more...
Of course, it's a very dynamic backlog.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, awesome. And can people find specifically you in person somewhere? Socials? Yeah. So, email?
We have an event calendar on the website itself, so we're going to present at a couple events. We're going to Citrix Summit.
Yeah, not presenting there.
Not presenting, just going to attend.
Yeah, we do present at Agile Disrupt in Munich in February of 2020.
There is a performance summit probably after this one is already released, but now it's before.
Yeah, so the VDR Performance Summit, we're not going to present there.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Awesome.
So what if people want to send you a postcard?
Is it on email, Slack?
We'll leave my details in the notes.
Okay, awesome. So thank you all for listening. We hope you enjoyed this snack as we try to serve you the right amount of EUC for your appetite. If you have anything you want to add here or just want to stay in touch, reach out to us. This can be done on our social channels or by email, podcast@eucdigest.com. Cheers, love, and rockets.
This podcast is brought to you by Liquidware. Liquidware is the leader in adaptive workspace management solutions for Windows desktops. Their products cover all facets of management to ensure the ultimate user experience across all workspaces, physical, virtual, DAS, or cloud.